Hello. I'm Mark Chris, Chief of the Thoracic Oncology Service at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in New York, New York. I'd like to welcome you all to this edition of Medscape Oncology Insights. Today, we'll discuss key studies and studies that got our interest on lung cancer that were presented at this year's annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology here in Chicago. Joining me today is Dr. Egbert Smit, Professor of Pulmonary Medicine at the Free University Medical Center in Amsterdam, Netherlands. Welcome,
Egbert. Thank you, Mark.
And we're looking forward to hearing from you today, for your opinions as a lung cancer expert, but also, you know, the differences between practice here and how the things you've learned here at ASCO are going to influence you rather than us. So I'll begin right away about what things kind of caught your interest and do you think are special new piece of information that you heard.
So I think for me, actually, there were two totally unrelated subjects which struck me the most. First was the was an analysis of the lung cancer mutational consortium, which
near and dear to my heart.
Near to your heart, I can tell that. But there was an analysis of those patients that tested positive for a target that was actionable, and were either treated or untreated. And I think that's provided the last piece of information in a bigger cohort of patients, where you actually showed us that patients that were treated according to their target actually lived longer than those patients not receiving that treatment. So I think that is a very, very important piece of information also for us in Europe, because we are a little bit behind of you, I think, and the thinking of the people who have to fund all these drugs is a little bit behind as compared to the U.S. So I think that is also for us in Europe a very important piece of information. The second thing that struck me is something that was reported on in very early disease. In at least in my country, we have two options for patients with stage 1A disease, that is little nodes with no lymph node metastases. And we have a fairly big tradition in stereotactic radiotherapy, so high-dose radiotherapy. And there were actually two abstracts presented in a poster discussion session which struck me as important. One was an abstract from the MD Anderson group that showed that in patients with operable disease, and resectable disease that were operable, actually the local control rate was in excess of 90%. And the second abstract presented in the same section was about local recurrences after sublobar resections.
But that first group, though, they were people treated with SBRT.
Yes.
And these people traditionally, though, even now, don't normally get SBRT, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, but
if you're
this
operable,
was, yes,
you have surgery.
Yeah.
And resectable.
Well, this was in the context of a study, so it's not. I know it in here in the U.S. You're very much on the operating.
Do
you do surgery. Well, we do surgery as well. We do not surgery. We try to avoid surgery where you reasonably can avoid it.
Yeah.
So in small nodules, taking away a whole lobe, actually in, especially in younger persons who are at risk of secondary lung cancers,
sure,
actually might not be that good an idea. But I agree, we need randomized trials.
But I think we share the same idea, though, and as we've learned from other forms of cancer, that doing a traditional cancer operation may not be necessary.
Right.
And that when we're curing more people, we really have to think more about their long-term consequences and sparing the lung will ensure a quicker recovery and frankly, a more normal life for years to come.
Right. So in that sense, it's a pity that, as was our study in the Netherlands, where we had a phase 3 plan comparing stereotactic radiotherapy to surgery, as this study was closed for low accrual, slow accrual, and that also happened here in the U.S. And I think that is really a pity for our patients that we will see, that we will continue to see, especially now we're going to screen those folks. where we will find them.
You think of trying it again now that stereotactic radiation is more accepted?
Yeah, I think that's really worthwhile.
So at the meeting here, I was again struck by how this concept of personalized medicine has happened again. And you touched on it already with the Lung Cancer Mutation Consortium. I think what we saw here at the meeting was kind of two concepts. Number one, you know, finding additional targets. We heard more about Ross. The group gave a larger series about the use of crizotinib in people with ROS1.
It didn't change anything?
It didn't, and they did have more patients, and I think the testing for that is becoming more universal. We're going to find more patients, but we have a very clear benefit from crizotinib.
So talking about testing for ROS, what I was particularly interested in were a few studies where they showed that immunohistochemistry detection of ROS overexpression correlated to some extent with the FISH. I think that is also relevant.
I think where they've looked at either FISH or mutation testing and a well-designed and tested monoclonal antibody used in immunohistochemistry testing, it really gives very equivalent results.
Yeah.
I know one of the pathologists at our institution, Maureen Zukowski, has taken on a project to basically do immunohistochemistry testing on every specimen where we're doing the FISH testing. She's found really a fine correlation there. And in many settings, the ability to do the immunohistochemistry test is a very facilitates the whole process because departments are all set up to do that already.
Yes.
They don't need to bring in new staff, and the FISH is really a more cumbersome test, except maybe in Colorado.
Yes, definitely.
Where they're FISH experts. I think the other target that got a lot of attention here at the meeting, the other aspect is ALK. There was a trial for crizotinib showing that in the second line setting, that results with crizotinib in terms of response rate and progression-free survival were superior to standard chemotherapies used second line, both pemetrexed and docetaxel. But new agents were also discussed as well. The compound from Ariad, compound from Chugai, and LDK-378. And I think in all those studies, it was very clear benefit. And interestingly, the rate of response approaching 3/4 of patients in people that had progressed on crizotinib is really equivalent to what you saw with crizotinib. I found that a little odd, though, that you got the same rate of response.
Yes.
The second line. I mean, did you strike you as unusual or?
I don't think that. For instance, if you compare this to the other oncogenic driver that we know very well in lung cancer, EGFR, we didn't have seen anything similar. So it makes you also want to think about how good is crizotinib inhibiting ALK.
Yeah. So my one of my colleagues, Neil Rosen, always says that you need a good target and you need a good drug. And to get the maximum benefit, you have to have both. And I must say, I always felt crizotinib was a good drug, and it's helped a huge number of patients. Yeah. But there may be even better drugs than the three that were discussed here at ASCO
interesting is that not every ALK rearrangement seems to respond in the same way to crizotinib. There are those that are less sensitive to crizotinib, and it may well be that there you have this.
That's an emerging area of investigation. All of these fusions with the, I'll call it the activating fusion, the ALK fusion, there are many fusion partners, and it's the same with RET and ROS as well. And I think as our testing becomes more sophisticated, we're probably going to find that perhaps some of these outliers are the ones that have a specific kind of a fusion. I think right now we just would treat anybody with an ALK or RET or ROS fusion, but it may be that it's going to make a difference. I think we're excited about the BRAF information as well. There was data presented here with the drug dabrafenib that in patients with lung cancers that had V600E BRAF mutations, the same sensitized mutation seen in melanoma, there was a very good response rate, good tolerability of the drug. I know that everybody is excited and has good reason to be because of the good results in melanoma, but we now have some of those good results in lung cancer as well.
I mean, if you looked at the slides that were presented this morning, you say the same waterfall plot that has been shown for probably for ALK and EGFR in the early years, so in the first trial. So I think this definitely is a target that one should consider testing routinely. I think somewhere between next year and the year thereafter.
The other kind of companion information that was presented here is the availability of mutation testing. You mentioned about the consortium experience. One of the purposes of the consortium, and I think not everybody appreciates that, was to develop the testing capability at each of the sites. It actually was part of the ERA grant in the U.S., the American Recovery and Relief Act, and part of that act it was to develop new technologies that would, you know, buy new equipment for institutions, train new people, create new jobs, and we actually did that. I mean, virtually every site now that
does
may
his
not
own
have
testing.
Had that testing, and that's one of the unsung benefits of the LCMC. It's kind of interesting in the U.S. where any doctor working with their pathologist has access to this next gen testing, where over 200 relevant genes for cancer can be obtained by really any physician in America through their pathologist, you know, sends the specimens. Do you have anything like that yet?
I think in the Netherlands, next gen testing, at least in the routine clinical setting, is still in its infancy. I know in my country there are 4 centers where they do next gen testing routinely now, since the beginning of this year. So we test for the actionable oncogenes like EGFR and ALK, which is, I think, quite well developed actually in the Netherlands. But next gen is still a little bit too far away.
Do individual hospitals test, or are they sent to like a regional hospital to do that?
Yes, well, we have a population of 16 million.
And 16.
1-6. And there are 12 pathology laboratories that do testing.
Oh, okay.
And approximately 1 in 1.5 million.
And so it sounds like you have a fairly well-organized system. Speaking of well-organized systems, the data was presented again today about the system in
French.
And in a nutshell, through a cooperation of industry, government, academic centers in France, they have arranged for every patient who has a lung cancer diagnosis to have fairly comprehensive molecular testing. I mean, I think that's
it was amazing. Amazing effort.
I mean, when you think about all the different, you know, governmental, industry, academic centers competing with each other, and that they made this happen, and year after, and it's been going on for several years now. Yeah.
So I think the really good part of it was that actually there is a link to the to the clinical data.
Yeah.
So we get information about when these mutations are discovered, what do these people get for treatment, and how was their outcome? Very much the same like you did for your LCMC.
The other development, again, highlighted at the meeting this year, I think, was the emergence of immunotherapy. Not just in lung cancer, but in all cancers. I know there were sessions yesterday about CTLA-4 therapy with anti-PD-1, PD-L1 therapy in melanoma. There was a lot of buzz about that, and simultaneously, Dr. Wolchuk's paper came out in the New England Journal of Medicine describing that. Lung cancer is a little behind melanoma there, but I know the clinical trials testing that concept are open here in the United States, and there are at least 4 anti-PD-1, anti-PD-L1 antibodies in testing here in the U.S. now. I don't know if you've had experience.
No, I personally, so far. I had no experience with the with immunotherapy. I'm a sort of a non-believer in immunotherapy. I sent my patients to a nearby institute where they have the drugs available, and
Well, we'll,
that's how I will.
I think
I
a lot of people,
it.
A lot of people are going to try to make you a believer.
Yeah.
Clearly, it's at its infancy, and yeah. You know, in many ways, it's sort of like the start of the EGFR mutation
right.
story again. We see some patients with unbelievable
responses,
durable responses,
yeah.
excellent tolerability. Other people that doesn't seem to help at all.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see over the next couple of ASCOs that we're going to figure out what it is that defines those people that are going to
yeah.
benefit.
And no doubt. Still, I think what was relevant in those sessions was that it is completely clear that we will not cure those patients with one drug, like the early days of chemotherapy.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I caution that note a little bit, too. I mean, I think some of us were surprised that abstract, I guess maybe 2 years ago, looking at imatinib and GIST tumors,
yeah.
I think everybody assumed that giving imatinib in the adjuvant setting would not cure patients.
Yeah, sure.
But indeed, the cure rate did go up. So we can hopefully be pleasantly
but
surprised.
But that's yeah. not the same as metastatic disease, right?
Not Long the cancer. Same. But I want to cure people. Then I'll start with
okay.
the adjuvant,
okay.
and then we'll work on that as well.
Good.
But I think your point is well taken.
Yeah.
And the whole field is moving that
yeah.
way. And actually, there was a drug approval last week giving both a BRAF and a MET inhibitor
right.
together,
yeah.
Proving exactly what you said,
yeah.
that's the way we're going to go. That was in BRAF mutant melanoma. So there are a lot of interesting things this year. There's not one blockbuster comment,
no.
but there's a lot of things that make you think. There are a lot of...
that's always good.
That's always good. But there are also some very clear agents that are going to help people, the new ALK agents, the BRAF
yeah.
agents, new targets that we can... RET, ROS, you know... A year ago, nobody was talking about any of these things, and now
yeah.
we're talking about which is the best drug rather than that. Egbert, thank you for joining us and sharing your
okay.
special knowledge about oncology and pulmonary oncology. And thank all of you for joining us on this edition of Medscape Oncology Insights. This is Mark Criss reporting from ASCO 2013.